जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंगा। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 4 हिरण्यकशिपु टेररिजेस द यूनिवर्स टेक्स्ट 31 एंड 32। 31 इज आई थिंक ऑन द बोर्ड। ब्रह्मण्याशील संपन्ना सत्यसंधो जितेन्द्रियः आत्मवत् सर्वभूतानां एक प्रिय सुहृत्तमः। ब्रह्मण्यशील संपन्ना सत्यसंधो जितेन्द्रियः आत्मवत् सर्वभूतानां एक प्रिय सुहृत्तमः। ब्रह्मण्याशील संपन्ना this text 32 as well. Dasavatsan taryangri pitruvat dinavatsalaha bhatruvat sadrushe snigdho gurushva ishvara bhavanaha vidyartha rupa janmadhyo manastambha vivarajitaha. So word for word. Brahmanya, cultured as a good brahmana. Shila sampannaha, possessing all good qualities. Satyasandha, determined to understand the absolute truth. Jita Indriyaha, fully controlling the senses and mind. Atmavat, like the super soul. Sarva Bhutanam, of all living entities. Ekapriya, the one beloved. Suhrittamaha, the best friend. Dasavat, like a menial servant. Sannata, always obedient. Arya Angrihi, at the lotus feet of great persons. Pitruvat, exactly like a father. Dinavatsalaha, kind to the poor. Bhratravat, exactly like a brother. Sadrushe, to his equals. Snigdaha, very affectionate. Gurushu, unto the spiritual master. Ishvara Bhavanaha, who considered exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vidya, education. Artha, riches. Rupa, beauty. Janma, aristocracy or nobility. Adhya, endowed with. Mana, pride. Stambha, impudence. Vivarjitaha, completely freed from. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The qualities of Maharaj Prahlad, the son of Hiranyakashipu, are described herewith. He was completely cultured as a qualified Brahmin, having very good character and being determined to understand the absolute truth. He had full control of his senses and mind. Like the super soul, he was kind to every living entity and was the best friend of everyone. To respectable persons, he acted exactly like a menial servant. To the poor, he was like a father. To his equals, he was attached like a sympathetic brother. And he considered his teachers, spiritual masters, and older god brothers to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was completely free from unnatural pride that might have arisen from his good education, riches, beauty, aristocracy, and so on. Purport. These are some qualifications of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is automatically a Brahmana because Vaishnava has all the good qualities of a Brahmana. Shamodamastapashaucham Kshantirarjavamevacha Jnanam Vijnanam Astikyam Brahmakaramasvabhavajam. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, wisdom, knowledge, and religiousness. These are the qualities by which the Brahmanas work. These qualities are manifest in the body of a Vaishnava. Therefore, a perfect Vaishnava is also a perfect Brahmana, as indicated here by the words Brahmanya Shila Sampannaha. A Vaishnava is always determined to understand the absolute truth. And to understand the absolute truth, one needs to have full control over his senses and mind. Prahlad Maharaj possessed all these qualities. A Vaishnava is always a well-wisher of everyone. The six Goswamis, for example, are described in this way, Dhira Dhira Jana Priyo. They were popular with both the gentle and the ruffians. A Vaishnava must be equal to everyone, regardless of one's position. Atmavat, a Vaishnava should be like Paramatma. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hriddeshe Arjuna Tishtati. Paramatma does not hate anyone. Indeed, he is in the heart of a Brahmin, but he is also even in the heart of a pig. As the moon never refuses to distribute its pleasing rays even to the home of a chandala, a Vaishnava never refuses to act for everyone's welfare. Therefore, a Vaishnava is always obedient to the spiritual master, Arya. The word Arya refers to one who is advanced in knowledge. One who is deficient in knowledge cannot be called Arya. At the present, however, the word Arya is used to refer to those who are godless. This is the unfortunate situation of Kali Yuga. The word Guru refers to the spiritual master who initiates his disciple into advancement in the science of Krishna or Krishna consciousness, as stated by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Shri Bhagavan Mantropadeshake Gurav Iti Arthaha. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturu Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namonamaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So in this chapter, while we are hearing about the terrorist activities of Hiranyakashipu, there is also Narada Muni who is speaking about Prahlad Maharaj, starting from this verse. So this is like, after hearing about all the ways in which Hiranyakashipu was terrorizing the entire universe, this is like a welcome refresh, or a refreshing topic, because we can hear about Prahlad Maharaj. And he begins speaking about Prahlad Maharaj. First, overall, he said, overall, Brahmanya Shila Sampanna, that he was very Brahminical and of very amazing character and qualities. Shila Sampanna means possessing all good qualities. And then he lists those qualities. So we've heard this many times, so it's good to hear it again and again, how the devotee is the embodiment of all good qualities. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvair gunair tatra samasate suraha. That by the dint of development of Krishna consciousness, a person becomes the embodiment of good qualities. And the verse also says that those who are not a devotee of Krishna, even if they show some good qualities, it's of no value. Because those good qualities are nothing but a reflection of their taking a ride on the chariot of the mind. It means that they will demonstrate these good qualities so long as it is convenient for them. As soon as the circumstances or something becomes inconvenient, or they are challenged, or there is a limit up to which they will manifest them, as soon as the circumstances change, their good qualities will vanish. In other words, it means that they may be weak-hearted. There's no value to it. However, a devotee, the point is that people like Prahlad Maharaj, or a devotee of that caliber, there is no limit to which, there's no limit at which that quality will change for them. So if they're tolerant, they're tolerant unlimitedly. If they are compassionate, they are compassionate unlimitedly. And one can test it again and again and again to whatever degree, and it will not change in them. For any of us, it can change. So what is okay today may not be okay tomorrow, etc. That is because to some degree we are still riding on the chariot of the mind. What feels good, we do. What doesn't feel good, we don't do. So the first order of business then is to take control of the senses and mind. That's what Prabhupada writes here. So here's a statement. A Vaishnava is always determined to understand the absolute truth. It's called Satya Sandha. And to understand the absolute truth, one needs to have full control over his senses and mind. So my question to you is, why is this the case? That to understand the absolute truth, why does one have to have full control over his senses and mind? Am I good? Our perception will be disturbed by dualities. The absolute truth is fixed. Okay? Thank you. Anyone else? We don't have time?
We wouldn't have time.
Mukunda, even this mic could reduce a little bit. Yeah.
Our senses and mind would be carrying us all sorts of material activities.
We won't have time to focus on the absolute truth. Okay, very good. That's a very good one. Anyone else? Yeah. Oh, same, okay. Anyone else?
Well, one aspect is that it's like the word dira is used sober, so if we're intoxicated by materialism, you know, like a drunk person can't understand anything, so if we're intoxicated with materialism, then it's the same thing as Jordan, you know, we'll waste our time. So.
Uncontrolled senses and mind cause severe destruction and deviation from the purpose of life. So if one wants to know the absolute truth, then the first thing to do is to control the mind and senses. Okay? Then he gives a list of character qualities. He was kind to every living entity. Every living entity he was kind to. We find ourselves kind to certain living entities and not certain living entities. We don't even know what all living entities are or who they are. He was the best friend of everyone. Suhrittamaha. A best friend of everyone means what? What does it mean to you? He was always thinking about their highest welfare. Is that what you said? Okay. And how does that manifest? How does a person become...
You know, it's kirtan of Krishna's name, fame, pastimes.
Yeah, so this is that with everyone, he was able to remind them of Krishna. Somehow or the other, he was able to connect them to Krishna. And he saw everyone as Krishna's parts and parcels. And then he was very cultured. To respectable persons, he acted like a menial servant. To the poor, he was like a father. To his equals, he was attached like a sympathetic brother. And he considered his teachers, spiritual masters, and older God-brothers to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sakshat Dharitvena Samasta Shastra. And then, it says he was completely free from unnatural pride that might have arisen from his good education, riches, beauty, aristocracy, and so on. So he had all of these. Any one of us, or anyone, I should want to pick on us, anyone who may have even one of these, let's say a little good education, or a little richness, or beauty. Now, beauty is a very relative thing, right? It says it's in the eye of the beholder. Or aristocracy. There's no one aristocratic anymore. But even if someone has even a little bit of this, then it causes unnatural pride. Now, what to speak of a person who has all these qualities, all these at his disposal? Is the son of a very, very powerful and rich man. Apparently it's beauty, so it means he was very good looking, very rich, well-educated. I mean, his teacher was Srila Narada Muni. So anyone can say, my teacher, my guru is Narada Muni. There is this unnatural pride sometimes. My guru is such and such. And his guru was Narada Muni. It was described that he was completely freed, vivarjitaha, of any such pride. Of having this sense of ownership of any of these assets. Okay, any questions, comments? Prabhupada focuses on the word Arya, so I'll see if we can touch that. Any common question? Yeah. Hold on.
How do we start controlling mind at this point? Because in Bhagavad Gita it says, you know, easier to catch the wind in a valley than control your mind. So senses we can somehow control by using our intelligence, as it also says in Bhagavad Gita. But what would we do about our mind, controlling the mind?
Well, the same intelligence is supposed to control the mind. The same intelligence that is controlling the senses is supposed to control the mind. Last night I was at the Naperville Center speaking on tolerance as a quality of greatness. So I came back home about 11 something. How tolerance is a quality of greatness, and the story was about Bhrigu Muni kicking Lord Vishnu in his chest. And so, tolerance, in one sense, is a quality of the mind. I mean, for this discussion, we can, this senses and all that too, in general. And the point I was making is that we do things because there is inner dissatisfaction. For example, people travel to one place to another place because there is inner dissatisfaction. So they feel that when they go to different places, they can feel satisfied. Versus a Srila Narada Muni, who also travels anywhere in the universe, or even Vaikuntha, but his travel is not because of dissatisfaction. We go, we take photos, and we feel, now another place. But Narada Muni is not moving from one place to another from dissatisfaction. He's moving on the order of Krishna. So that inner dissatisfaction impels us to do certain things. This is the point last night. And Rupa Goswami gives 6 categories of things that we do because of inner dissatisfaction. The urge to speak something. Prabhupada says speak nonsense, but there's the urge to speak. Because somehow we feel satisfied that in a group when we speak, my point has been made, my voice has been heard, I have expressed something, I'm contributing, I feel some satisfaction. Then there is manasa vegam. Right? The mind has to feel satisfied. So what does it do? It keeps planning something or the other. Or we say dreaming about the future. And feel satisfied in those dreams. You know, now I'm doing like this. In a few years, I'll finish my Bhakti Shastri. Then, you know, I will teach it. I will say those. However, you know, the mind keeps all these wonderful plans, so certain aspirations, is it all constant? The way the mind feels satisfied, etc. Kurodha vegam, because unless you react or respond in anger, you don't feel satisfied. You have to do and say something in anger because that's the vent for the dissatisfaction. Tongue, belly, and genitals, same thing. The tongue, I was asking the group yesterday, what is the urge for the tongue? To taste different tastes. So the tongue is always dissatisfied by the quality. It's always looking for quality. And the belly is dissatisfied by the quantity. The tongue always wants quality, the stomach always wants quantity. And that's the urge. And the problem is that the communication between the two usually is not working. The tongue says quality, hey, means quantity, like that. So there's in dissatisfaction of the senses. So the one way is to learn to tolerate. So I gave a 3-point, practical solution that's there in the Bhagavad Gita, which we talked last week, I think. One is, unless one consciously changes one's sense of identity, that dissatisfaction will not go. So it's a practice that every day we consider, or in every situation we try to consider, I'm a servant of Krishna. And act from that to whatever degree we can. What does a servant think and do? We may say, oh, it's unnatural for me, I'm not a servant of Krishna. Yeah, it's unnatural right now, but we are meant to practice. So that's the answer, Sergei. That Krishna says, it's easier to control the wind than the mind. In fact, that's what Arjuna says, and right after that, Krishna acknowledges, that's true. It is true. It's very difficult to control the mind. And then he says, but by practice one can. One is meant to practice controlling the mind. If we give in, you know, in our case, we can't even say it's easier to control the wind. Arjuna could say that. We can't say, I can control, we can't control any wind coming from anywhere. I have absolutely no control. So udana is what we heard. We can't control that also. But the idea is to practice. Krishna says to practice. So three things are necessary. One is to change the sense of identity. I'm a servant of Krishna versus something. The exercise we did yesterday is whenever we are dissatisfied, if we ask the question, who am I who is dissatisfied? Very likely the answer will be something other than, I'm a servant of Krishna. Of course, someone may say, I'm a very dissatisfied servant of Krishna. That's a different topic. But generally it will be some upadhi, some identity separate from the true identity. So that's one. So sense of identity. Second is to understand the nature of the world we are in. That's Krishna's instruction. The nature is, you have absolutely no control over how things are manifesting in this world. And he gives the example of the seasons changing. Anyone can change the season? Absolutely not. So the nature of this world is, things are beyond your control. So what you have to do is, just tolerate. So if you have, or any one of us has a certain malady or difficulty, all you have to do is to learn to say, tolerate it. Okay, I have this. But the sense of identity will help transcend it or change it. And the third thing is seeing things in relationship to Krishna, or investing in our relationship with Krishna. The example I gave was, let's say there is a couple, okay, and for the sake of discussion, assuming that there is some affection between the two. Now that relationship, it's a mundane one, but that relationship is held important enough that even if there is a very beautiful woman or a very handsome man, the urge to go and connect with them is curbed or tolerated by the fact that, hey, I have this relationship, and this relationship is more important. Now that example breaks down very quickly, but the idea is with Krishna, that this, the relationship with Krishna is more important, what I invest there, than the urge to do something outside that relationship. That's like the opposite and equal force that pulls us. So these three things. So how you culture the mind is like that. Of course, in the 17th chapter, Krishna gives other ways of culturing the mind, austerity of the mind, etc. There's a list. But this is sort of the foundational principle. You have a blissful smile, which I don't know what that means, but state of happiness. Cool. Anything else? Do you have something?
When we're hearing about the qualities of great personalities like Prahlad Maharaj, and later on we will hear in a few verses that these qualities are eternally related to him. So there's no question of them changing at any point. Whereas the conditioned souls, our qualities are always shifting around because of being in the modes of nature.
Yeah.
And as practicing devotees, sometimes when we hear about the qualities of great personalities, it can be a little discouraging because we realize that, you know, wow, I'm very far off the mark in terms of the exhibition of the qualities. And then sometimes now it doesn't manifest as a little bit of dejection, but also it may manifest as trying to artificially culture some of these qualities. And I use the word artificially culture because these qualities are inherent to the devotion.
Sure.
And so they're naturally manifesting as such. And so we might, out of our dejection, try to inherently or artificially culture some of these qualities. But then it changes because of being conditioned.
Yeah.
And then we become further discouraged. So how are we supposed to assimilate these descriptions? Because this description is going to go on for quite some time.
Yeah.
Prahlad Maharaj's glory. So how are we looking into the future verses to assimilate what we're hearing?
One is appreciation for Prahlad Maharaj, because part of a Vaishnava culture is not just, hey, what qualities do I have, or am I feeling dejected or disappointed, or, oh man, this is not going to ever happen to me. But an appreciation for, wow, persons like this exist. And it's very amazing. Because very soon it might look like fiction writings, like, wow, nice. Almost like a superhero. No, but these are true persons, right? So it's not just Marvel comic or something, it's just Bhagavatam. So an appreciation for there are genuine persons like this. And so if there is person like this, it means it is possible for us. That's one thing. Second, it is to sober us a little bit, how far we are from the mark. Because oftentimes we, like you said, may artificially or somehow with some Krishna consciousness exhibit some tolerance and surprise ourselves. Hey, I was tolerant, wow. That was some stroke of something. But it helps sober us that, hey, I have some work to do, quite a bit of work to do. And unless Krishna's mercy is there, to tread this path is not a joke. Yeah, that's the second thing. And the third thing is, you know, any of us made a long trip, India, let's say, you sit on the plane and it shows you on the screen a plane sitting here in Chicago, destination, whatever, New Delhi, and a whole line like that and says 11,000 miles. And you think, oh, long journey. It's boring. It's a long journey, right? And then, I don't know if any of you have done it, but for me, every hour I check how far we have gone. how much more. And it seems like never ending, right? It's like 14 hours. Then you do something, you sleep, you read something, you wake up and it says 13 and a half. That's it? It's like, what happened? But part of that, what is further ahead is what's already behind. A few miles have been covered. I like this example of driving. You know, when we drive a car, we definitely are looking forward, we're going in the direction we're going, and once in a while we have to look into the rear view mirror just to see where we've come from, what else is going there. So where were we 10 years ago? And what was our culture of the heart? What kind of qualities and aspirations or whatever we had? and 10 years, let's say, 10 years or whatever, something has moved, surely we have moved some part. Okay, so that means the process is working. And it's not like, oh, in this lifetime before I die, will I be like Prahlad Maharaj? Like Krishna's grace? Maybe, may not be, who knows? But at least the long journey has begun that for lifetimes we didn't even consider. So it is meant to give us hope in that sense. So Rupa Goswami's, you know, hope against hope, that at least this has started. And even the little that has started has brought about such a big change in the way I see people and see things around me. I see circumstances. At least I'm considering, right? If something is irritating me, at least an alternative exists that I say, should I tolerate this? Earlier, it was not even a consideration. Should I tolerate this? Should I forgive someone? Should I beg for forgiveness? Should I apologize? These things were not even in our dictionary. It was like not even there. But now maybe at least, okay, that's all right. Vaishnavas, Krishna, something. So in that sense, it is hope-giving. But it's not meant to tell us, look for all your qualities here. He was kind to all respectable persons. Yeah, I offered obeisances to Maharaj yesterday. He was like a menial servant. I brought him some water. He was sympathetic. He was a sympathetic brother. Yeah, I told my friend, get off the mental platform. Spiritual master. Yeah, I sing the song. I know the verses. He was completely free from unnatural pride. Yeah, I don't have so much. It's not so much. Not so much pride. So I think it's just pretty good. Of course not. I'm making light of it, but you get the idea.
I have a follow-up question. Thank you. Your answer was very beautiful. The follow-up question is that with your example, the car example. So yeah, if we at least occasionally see where we have come from, then we do feel inspired that, okay, something has actually definitely taken place. I think sometimes, though, when we hear the messages about going back home, back to God, and in one life, you know, that if I was more realistic that Christian consciousness may actually be a multi-life cultivation, then that car example works really well. Because, all right, I've made this much progress, I'll probably go a little bit further, but I might not achieve the full thing in this particular life. But many times in our, I call it transcendental propaganda, we kind of press on the point of back to God and in one life, and if you just do this or you do that, then certainly you'll go back home, back to Godhead. But then when we hear about the real standard of devotion and so on, it makes it harder to appreciate where we've come from, because I got to get back in one lifetime, and It looks like I might not make it. Anyway, that's kind of more, it's a common question. So,
So, you know, that's why even the very fundamental verse, Dehi Nusmin Yatha Dehe, it's easy to tell others, but we ourselves are bound by a lifespan. And it's not meant to be bound by a lifespan, actually. Because who am I that is looking at devotional service? If I think of myself as a finite being, then yeah, I'm like, oh, another life is what we are thinking. But if I start thinking as a soul or a living entity, then it is, in that sense, continuous. It's not like, oh, another life. It's just, okay, I'm going to continue and continue and continue. It's important to change the sense of identity while performing devotional service. That's important. Otherwise, we do get constrained by, oh, I'm supposed to make it in one life. That's one. Another is, it also feels somehow we forget, or it's conditioned within us to think that I have to make it on my own. And when we think, if we think like that, then it poses the challenge, mind, how is one lifetime enough? So the point that we, I guess, have to take in deeper is, by Krishna's mercy, things can speed up or however he would like, but ultimately it's Krishna's mercy that I'm waiting for, and that may come whenever. But the sense of identity is necessary. Otherwise, it is very constraining. I think of it in terms of lifetimes, and each lifetime somehow makes the view of the trajectory very discouraging. And so Rupa Goswami's idea of enthusiasm is that enthusiasm is only fed by a proper conception of self. When conception of self is not clear, that enthusiasm will go down. So part of that culture is the sense of self must be clear. Okay, I am soul. And like Krishna uses the example, right? Vacham si jiranarni yatha vihaya. It's like I'm performing devotional service when I'm wearing kurta and dhoti. I'm going to continue devotional service when I wear a pant and t-shirt. I'm going to continue devotional service when I wear shorts and another t-shirt. I'm going to continue devotional service when I wear another dhoti and kurta. In that sense of self. Make sense? Okay. Anything else? Yeah.
Krishna, this relates to the point made in the Purport where it says the word area refers to one who's advanced in knowledge.
Yeah.
Arya. So this brings up the question that Jai Jagannath Prabhu brought up in class a few days ago. The question that Carlos asked, that does one have to be a scholar to be considered advanced in knowledge? And I was thinking of the pastime from like a different perspective, like the pastime of Hanuman and the spider. Hanuman, he had the capacity to lift boulders, and the spider, you know, had the capacity to lift, you know, tiny pebbles or dust. And so my question is related to the fact that if we have the capacity like Hanuman with sharp intelligence, is it true that we shouldn't give that capacity up that Krishna's given us to, like, you know, remember things, et cetera, under the, you know, notion that, you know, I don't want to become proud? So is it that if we do have sharp intelligence, we should use that in Krishna's service? If it becomes effortless, is it true that we shouldn't renounce it and give it up because I don't want to run the risk of being proud?
What do you think?
My answer is, you know, yes, but maybe you can elaborate on it and give a report. So, have any other points in the scriptures?
The idea that if I use my God-given intelligence, then I might become proud. According to Rupa Goswami, that is called false renunciation, because we think prapanchikataya buddhya, and it says mumukshubi. Mumukshubi means the desire for being liberated from that distress of pride. So they parityago, they give up serving Krishna with the capacities given. Halgu vairagya katyate. So the answer is yes, we shouldn't. Is that okay?
Basically, the negative qualities that may come upon us, we shouldn't
fear,
have fear.
You know, we do hear sometimes, you know, we hear so much about pride and the effects of pride. It almost puts us in a check that we are afraid to take a step forward and, in one sense, take a risk. We live in the sense of a very cautioned life. And I feel then we don't learn certain things because it becomes theoretical. So it's all right. Take a little risk. Even if you're proud, do something and learn from it. Krishna will teach us. And that's nice, isn't it? Versus, I can't say anything because I'll be proud. You never learn it. You never learn going beyond it. How to actually do things. I like this because Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj was here, I think, last year. And this idea came from him, and he said, you know, we hear so much about offenses to devotees, that we live a life constantly in anxiety and fear, like, maybe I shouldn't say I'm afraid. And he said, no, it's all right. Go ahead and offend. Krishna will teach you. You learn from it. There's a lot to, not that go ahead and offend in that sense, but just don't be so scared all the time. Offensive. Not that you become fearless. I don't care, I'll offend anyone. That's not the point. This is live life and learn from it. We'll make mistakes. Great. So what? Mistakes are meant to teach us something. Krishna will teach us. So we shouldn't, the point he was making is we shouldn't be afraid of making mistakes. So please, understand the context. We shouldn't be afraid of making mistakes. Write it. I heard it in Bhagavatam class, said by our leader, let me just go do what I... No, not like that. But act and then learn. We find ourselves checked so much by that fear and caution, which is nice. At the same time, learn. Okay. We'll stop here. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Before you, I don't know what you're going to announce.